This evening on Vancouver Theater, a play by Michael Yates, The Calling.
Like a broken baby robin, caught in the hands of the child.
This is good.
Good, yes.
The way it should be.
Yes.
I told you.
Yes.
You're not listening.
Yes.
Where are you?
Yes. Here.
You're leaving again.
Yes. No. Oh, no, I'm not.
Yes, you are. You're going away. As you always go away, regardless how close you are. It's the way it is.
Oh, you don't know how it is.
You go elsewhere.
You're destroying the mood.
There wasn't one, really. Where do you go?
I'm right here. What do we do?
What do we do? There's nothing to do with me.
That's not true.
Of course it is. You know what is.
I keep trying to tell you.
Well?
But you're involved, you know.
Well?
Shall I answer it?
It's what you've been waiting for, isn't it?
What shall I say?
I'm only what you do while you wait.
Look, we've got to come to a decision. It may stop ringing.
That's right.
If I don't answer it, we'll never know.
That's right.
If you don't want me to, I won't.
What kind of a life would it be if you didn't?
I don't know. Would it please you if I didn't?
I don't know.
Turn off.
How can I?
I mean the music. Maybe I should just go over and take it off the hook. But stop the ringing.
Would it?
Well, yes, obviously.
I don't think it would stop the ringing. You'd wander around like someone to whom something important has occurred between consciousness and sleep. You promise yourself you'll remember and write it down when you wake up. But you don't. You'd walk around for days with that vacancy inside you.
How do you know?
I know only what you tell me.
Okay. Here's a show of strength. It can ring till it stops. I won't answer.
No.
Why?
No.
Well, then I'll just take it off the hook and not say a word.
We'd hear the voice in the dark from across the room saying, hello, 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 hello.
I'll pile pillows on top of it.
Well, we'd still hear it. After a while, it would begin to scream and scream. Unintelligible because it is screaming and distorted and distant. Then there would be silence. A terrible silence would surround us. Louder than an explosion. Silence. And then that awful noise that the phone makes when it's been off the hook for a long time. An obscene sound. It happens because they can't call you to tell you your phone is off the hook because your phone is off the hook.
Something has to be done.
Yes.
Look, if it weren't for the telephone, you'd have left me long ago, you know.
We'd never have gotten together.
Of course. And yet you object.
Yes, I object.
What you really want, that is, what really attracted you in the first place, was the idea of the telephone. But its physical reality, the time I must devote to it, you can't stand.
No, I don't know. What are you going to do about it?
Tell me what you want.
The telephone is black.
But you can't see it in the dark.
And it's always cold to the touch. It remains always slightly below room temperature. Colder than flesh. Colder than flesh. Don't you understand that?
Yes, I understand.
No. You never understand the way I understand.
Well, no. Oh, yes, that's true, but it doesn't make any difference.
It makes all the difference. It is the difference. Maybe the only difference. Oh, don't.
Well, somebody has to do something.
Well, what are you going to do?
I don't know. Either take it off the hook or... Oh, damn! Oh. Which end is which? Oh, now I've done it.
What?
Feels broken.
Did you fall?
No, the telephone.
Oh, which part?
Hello? Hello?
Can you hear anything?
No.
Then it's broken.
Shh. Just because I can't hear anything doesn't mean they can't hear me. Hello? Hello?
It's broken. Hang it up. You did all you could.
No, the speaker part seems okay.
Well, how do you know?
I don't know, but I have to risk it.
You see, just like I told you.
Shh. Hello? Hello? I realize this will seem very strange, but I can't hear you. It was dark, you see, and I got up to answer the telephone. I couldn't tell in the dark, of course, which end was which. Talking and listening very often become confused, as you no doubt know. What's that the philosopher says? What we do in our dreams, we also do in our waking hours. We first invent and create the man with whom we're dealing, and then we forget immediately that we have done it. Yes.
Oh, stop it. It's broken. You're talking to yourself.
Shh, it works. I know it does. Excuse me. I didn't know which end was which. And as I was fumbling with it, by chance I dropped it. Oh, it could have happened to anyone at all in the dark. The telephone is black, and so I can't hear anything.
Of course you can't hear anything.
Of course?
Of course.
What do you mean, of course?
There isn't anything. Nothing. Nothing at all.
You don't know.
I know.
How?
Intuition.
What can a woman know of intuition? What you mean by intuition is hunch, guided largely by mood, whim.
I know. Believe me, everything there is right here in this room. A man, a woman, walls, a ceiling, a bed. It's alpha and omega, beginning and end. Here, right here, is where children are conceived and born. And here, men and women die.
I'll be with you in just a minute. Nonsense.
You'll see.
Look, when I want you, I'll call you.
You did.
I can't, of course, know who you are or where you're calling from. I can't know why you called, but you know, I'm sure. Perhaps you were calling to find out my address. But if I don't know who you are, I can't possibly give you my address. One doesn't give out his address to everyone.
Have you ever read that poem about the people at the circus?
I've probably read 100 poems about people at circuses. One could almost say that all poetry is about people at circuses.
These people at the circus are sitting there enjoying the bright lights inside the tent, watching one act after the next, eating popcorn, cotton candy. And then suddenly, a storm comes up.
Well?
And the big top blows away. They all look up from their seats toward the heavens. And there isn't anything. There's just nothing at all.
Well?
Well, that's what I meant. Right here, in this room.
What can a woman know about poetry?
Nothing. Just nothing at all.
About my address and your call.
Who called whom?
It would be difficult for me to say what my address is anyway.
If we're all moving through time, then it's reasonable to assume we're moving through space as well, even when we're sitting still, you understand. Well, from that standpoint, I don't live anywhere at all, except perhaps in motion. It will seem strange that I called to say this.
The phone rang. You answered.
Without knowing who you are, I can't possibly give you my name either. And even if I could give you my name, I'm afraid I wouldn't really be giving you anything to speak of. A name is asked to be responsible for so much. A wet and squalling infant at the moment of birth, a gnarled and shrunken, feeble organism at the end, and all phases between, a multitude of different people jammed in beneath the slight cover of a single name.
Hang up.
This is necessary.
No.
There would be no life otherwise.
What about me? Us?
That's another matter entirely.
Our relationship doesn't constitute life.
Of course it does. You know it does. But the two things are quite different and mutually exclusive.
They shouldn't be.
Now there you fall for Dr. Freud's error. He couldn't distinguish between creation and procreation. If it weren't imperative that I call, I'd never have called.
You didn't.
But you came anyway.
Yes.
You recall our meeting?
Oh, yes.
It was at a time between calls. You said, "We're perfect for one another. This is how it should be." I said, "Yes, but the time will come when you'll feel I spend too much time on the phone. You'll throw up your hands and shout, 'You love that telephone more than you love me.' Of course, to save time, I'll nod and it'll be over with us."
And I said, "No, that won't happen. Even though what you do on the telephone is nothing, really."
I meant what I said.
I meant what I said.
Hello? Hello, you're still there, of course. Mind you, it's possible you're a wrong number, or rather, I'm a wrong number. That is, you really didn't want to talk to me at all.
If he did, he doesn't now.
I shall be very sorry later if this is an emergency. In fact, the prospect saddens me even now.
There isn't much time.
What do you mean?
For us.
No, you misunderstand. It's precisely because there isn't much time that I must talk now. There mightn't be another chance.
Excuse me. On the other hand, telephones often ring mysteriously. And when you pick up the receiver, there's neither a dial tone nor a voice at the other end. Simply an auditory vacancy. Nothing human nor electrical. Nothing, simply. Nothing at all.
Hang up. Please hang up. I'm waiting for you. Come back to me.
When I said in order to save time I'd nod and it would be over between us, it wasn't by way of actual assent to your premise that I love the telephone more than I love you. The fact is that the two situations, the two activities are quite incomparable. I don't love the telephone at all. It's simply something I must do.
I don't understand doing something that you don't love to do. I must try to persuade you to return to bed. Only because I love you.
The choices available to a man aren't very attractive. He can take up with a woman who's an absolute animal and knows nothing of his medium and suffer that solitude. Or choose one who fancies herself his aesthetic equal and try to tolerate the competition.
Whose choice am I?
Never mind. Categories are much easier to deal with than the things being categorized.
We men, you know, I must assume you're a man since I don't know any women.
What?
Other than you. Other than you. And I've tried to explain that you shouldn't really be a woman.
What else shall I be?
You shouldn't exist as a woman. That is, apart from me.
Then come back to bed.
You say while we're in bed together, I'm thinking of the telephone.
Well, isn't it true?
Perhaps sometimes.
Of course it's true.
Then why do you want me to come back to bed?
Put the phone down and come to bed.
But does it ever occur to you that sometimes while I'm on the telephone, I think of being in bed with you?
Forgive me. I have these lapses, distractions common. I'm so susceptible. I started to say, we men find expression so difficult. We don't trust words. We begin with magnificent intentions of honesty, but as soon as we've said a sentence, we're astounded that we've said it. Or perhaps we're fascinated by the shapes of words and their sounds, and before we know it, we're changing the arrangement of the sentence. Finally, the sentence is beautiful, but it bears no relation to what we so honestly wish to say.
What must I do to coax you back to bed?
Believe me, I want to come to bed.
Then come.
I can't. Please don't do that. You know I can't stand it when you do that. It closes the door between us. Why are you crying?
I can't see you in the dark. You're only the telephone. You're an apparatus.
An apparatus? An apparatus. Yes, that's just the way women think of men, isn't it? I'm a device you use to acquire children. I'm useful just for a moment, and thereafter you have your child. And that child's child, and that child's child. And you wonder why I turned the telephone. I'd talk 24 hours a day if I could, but I can't. I must sleep and eat and attend to the thousand details of merely living. Mortality disgusts me.
I suppose I'm part of the detail that so disgusts you.
Oh, no, look, this won't do. I didn't mean that.
I didn't mean that you're an apparatus. I meant that sometimes you seem cold and distant and mechanical and I want things between us to be so warm.
Terribly sorry to keep you waiting. My life, you know, has nothing to do with this. No, I don't mean quite that. This, what I'm doing now, is my life. Well, what else is there? This is the central thing, the axis. But I must deal somewhat with the banal trivia of staying alive. I've never understood why. And I don't like myself for doing it, even though I don't understand, and therefore couldn't possibly believe in it. I'll tell you what. There's a poem entitled The Scorpion that rather gets at what I want to say. It goes this way.
Turn it down, please.
The scorpion. Who knows the hot, stung days and brittle, cold nights of keeping a great poison pure? As if it weren't enough, these blank eyes, this useless armor, automatic claws that rasp, body that lives apart from that other. Come, gods, men, angels, who among you will think of me when my night arrives? When I rise over the dunes, when the long neck of this tail of mine draws back to strike the heel of my only moon. Keeping a great poison pure is the key line. It's obvious that the scorpion, that is, the poet, doesn't really think of his poetry as poison, but the world does. Women do.
I can forget all this. It isn't too late.
You make it so difficult for me. I want to come to bed. Eventually, I will come to bed. I always have. There's no reason to suppose anything has changed.
Excuse me again for a second. Please don't hang up.
Go back to bed. I must do this.
Now?
No.
Oh, you machine! Oh, you machine. You won't even put down the phone to hit me. You're like a dog on a leash. So long as I stand outside the reach of the wire, I'm perfectly safe. You automation!
If I weren't in the midst of this, I could kill you. Like any other animal, you have no real sense of odds or of danger. If you intrude again, you have fair warning. Believe me, there's no one I wouldn't kill to get to the telephone. I'm back. As I started to say, keeping a great poison pure is the key line. In the second stanza, the insect, that is the poet, discusses the uselessness of his armor, his body, his mortality. As the line goes, body that lives apart from that other. He hates even to name it. That is, his body, his life aside from the process of poetry, we must presume. The last stanza of the last movement, rather, breaks down into vague, surrealist garble. To strike the heel might refer to Achilles, the moon, to art itself, who can tell? Excuse me, we have another interruption.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
What?
Why did you turn up the music?
It looks like you'll have to hang up.
I can wait. So long as the line remains open, I can wait. You know that.
Yes. So long as the line remains open.
Now, what are you doing?
Never mind.
I can't see what you're doing.
It's dark.
Look. Whatever you're doing, stop it and listen to me. You must know that I do this only for you.
You do it for yourself.
But it's the same thing, isn't it?
No.
But it's the way it should be.
Yes, the way it should be.
But it isn't.
It isn't.
Why is this?
It's the difference between men and women.
It's the synonymity of men and women.
I don't know what it is.
No.
Look, I can tell you an anecdote about the poet who wrote The Scorpion. Mind you, my interest in poetry is only casual. The telephone is, so to speak, obviously, I suppose, my thing. I find poetry far too limiting. Its traditions are too narrow and too solid. I prefer poems of the phone. It's a much more communal and eclectic art. And communicating with others is the most important human thing. The metaphor of the switchboard, so to speak, is my fundamental sense of human design today. Oh, yes, the anecdote I promised. Poets, as you know, all lead wretched, insane lives. Dissolute, almost all of them. Well, this poet was typically dissolute. He had numerous women, was for a time an alcoholic, addicted to drugs, and had any number of other squalid things happen to him. But literary history records a conversation he once had with one of his women toward the terminus of their relationship. Apparently, whenever he handed one of his poems to the woman, an ignorant wench, obviously, she'd proclaim it the greatest poetry ever written. Well, he got fed up with it finally and slapped her face. Even animals can learn within certain limits, and this woman was no exception. The next time he handed her a poem, she said, Well, this poem is all right, I suppose. But this particular line seems weak to me. And he slapped her again. As I say, animals can learn.
That's the final insult.
I'm not referring to you. You know I never say anything on the telephone in my own voice. I never treat my personal history in artistic form.
What is your own voice?
As I said, once again she learned. The next time he handed her a poem, she remained silent. He slapped her again. A little later, she said to him, "I love you in spite of your art." He threw her out.
Goodbye.
Where do you think you're going?
I'm leaving you.
Couldn't you have said something? Couldn't you have called or something?
I did.
I didn't hear you.
You didn't answer.
I have the receiver in my hand. It was you who didn't want me to answer.
But I did want you to answer.
And I did.
But you broke the phone.
And therefore I could only talk. Since there was nothing to listen to.
Nothing at all?
Just nothing at all.
Yes.
It could have happened to anyone here in the dark, not knowing which end of the receiver was which end of the line was which. The idea of talking into the part that is talking is intolerable, or listening to something that is listening to you.
I understand.
You couldn't possibly.
Possibly not.
Women have never understood. I am the telephone, as anyone becomes his medium after a time. A man who is a man is living fully in his creative potential. And a woman dare not stay apart and suppose it unfeminine to participate. She must become the telephone too. Man, woman, and telephone, utterly indistinct from one another.
Goodbye.
Wait.
For what?
There must be something else.
Nothing.
Nothing at all?
Just nothing at all.
Be serious.
I am. Goodbye.
I called you because I wanted to say everything I know. Now, before it's too late. I stuff these hours with syllables and ideas because they're so empty otherwise. I thought you'd be amused, but you thought I was amusing myself to the exclusion of you. Now that you're gone, now that you've left the room, there's nothing to do but hang up. Nothing. Just nothing at all.
This evening on Vancouver Theater, The Calling, a play by Michael Yates. The two roles were played by Lillian Carlson and Lee Taylor. The technical operation was by Ian Stephen, with sound effects by Lars Eastholm. The play was directed by Robert Orchard and produced in the Vancouver studios of the CBC.